Okay, it's a great pleasure to introduce our last speaker of the day, Ganesh Sundaramurthy from Georgia Tech. Are you at UCLA?
I'm at UCLA now.
Oh, okay. In the program, he was at Georgia Tech, but he's now at UCLA. Wonderful. This is great. Everyone should move to UCLA. I was really interested to invite Ganesh. He's worked with Alan Tannenbaum at Georgia Tech for some time, and it's very, very intriguing work, trying to segment fiber bundles using parametric tubular representations. It's a very different concept to induce a vector space structure onto the modeling elements that you have in the brain in DTI. And I think the segmentation work that you'll see here is very, very effective and interesting to all of us. So thanks, Ganesh, for coming here.
Thanks, Paul, for the introduction. So before I start, I'd just like to thank the organizers for actually inviting me here, and also all the speakers for giving wonderful talks. So what I'm going to talk about today is a method for segmentation of fiber bundles. So we've heard a lot of talks which were talking about tracing fibers and then trying to use those to then get a segmentation of fiber bundles, like Lauren talked about. But I want to actually try to volumetrically segment fiber bundles all at once. Okay, so before I start, just want to mention that this is joint work with Vandana Mohan and John Melanokis. Probably I said his name wrong, but anyway. So this is the work with Professor Alan Tannenbaum's group at Georgia Tech. Okay, so the outline of my talk is the following. First, I'll briefly go through this. I'm going to introduce the fiber bundle segmentation algorithms and give some motivation. I'll go through this pretty quickly because a lot of people have already talked about this particular structure called the singulin bundle. Then I'll talk about the general methods for doing DW MRI fiber bundle segmentation. Then I'll move into very recent work, which is trying to create a variational framework for constructing a variational framework for doing fiber bundle segmentation. And this is really tailored to the singulin bundle, but it also applies to other fiber bundles in the brain. And this will bring me to the optimization of these energies that I'm going to introduce. And there's some interesting mathematics there, so I'd like to present something about that. And then finally, the experimental result and a summary. So you saw this diagram by Lauren, and by Gray's Anatomy. I'm very happy that she did a good job in explaining these fiber pathways, because I was worried that I would have to pretend to be a neuroanatomist or something. So what we're interested in doing segmentation of this singulin bundle, and as you can see from this diagram, this cross section looks basically it's a tubular structure. The core of it is a tubular structure, although there's some fibers spanning out of it. So it's 5 to 7 millimeters in diameter. It's located right above the corpus callosum, and the reason why people are interested in it is because it may be linked to schizophrenia. What is the imagery that we're using to view this singulin bundle? Well, it's DW MRI, and Professor Viviori would talk in great detail about processing of these images. But just to review, the representation of a DW MRI image is a function from R3, which are spatial locations in the brain, cross S2, which are all possible directions of the magnetic field, and that maps to a scalar value. So right here you see the intensity of various slices at different directions. Okay, if you want to visualize this, you can project this function on a sphere to a tensor and do a visualization. Okay, so I want to show a movie that shows the singular bundle. Okay. So you can see right here, so the red structure right here is the corpus callosum. Right above that is the cingulum bundle. And it sort of wraps around the corpus callosum. And one thing to note is that the intensity or the statistics in the cingulum bundle sort of vary throughout the length of the bundle. So you can see right here, so it's green up here, and then sort of as you go down, it turns sort of blue. Okay. Okay, so here I'm going to briefly present the methods for DW MRI fiber bundle analysis. So here's the general system that people are using to do DW MRI analysis. So you have the DW MRI data, and then you put it into this black box, which is tractography and segmentation algorithms. And then what the goal is to find structural information and also connectivity information. What part of the brain connects to what other part? Okay, so there's essentially two approaches for doing this, for implementing this black box here. So the path, there's two paths. There's one that you see right here, and the other that you see right here. So this was what Lauren talked about in very great detail, and also Professor Garrick and others. So the idea is that you try to trace out individual fibers using streamlined tractography, and then you do this for, say, 100 fibers, and then you use those and you do some clustering to obtain the fiber bundles. But what our group is doing is using sort of geodesic tractography to find one, just any bundle, any fiber in your bundle, and then use that as initialization to a volumetric segmentation procedure. So you don't trace all these 100 fiber bundles. Okay, so here's our approach for doing geodesic tractography, and Professor Weston gave a good overview of this this morning. So here's what we do to detect a single fiber in our fiber bundle of interest. So you're given two seed points, and the idea is to find an optimal path between them. And so a path is represented as a space curve, and the way we find this optimal path is by minimizing this energy right here, which is the integral along the curve integrated with respect to arc length of this function psi, which is a function of both position and the tangent to the curve. So what one wants to do is choose psi so that it's maximum when the tangent vector points in it aligns with directions of high diffusion in the DW MRI. Okay. So now that we have this energy functional, so by the way, this psi has to satisfy a certain convexity condition, that it has to be a positive definite. And once it's positive definite, you can actually use some Hamilton-Jacobi-Bellman approach to globally minimize its energy. And we, in particular, use a fast sweeping algorithm. So I guess you saw this image this morning. So the idea is that we picked two seed points here and here, and then this was the optimal path obtained. And what you see here is you see the path and then tensors overlaid along the path. So this is actually just, it's not a volumetric segmentation, it's just a single curve in the cingulum bundle. And so you see the right and the left cingulum bundle. So here's another view for doing for that result. I think we've also seen this in this diagram. So this is a comparison between doing streamlined tractography and this is geodesic tractography. So you can see that as you sort of follow the maximum direction of diffusion, at some point you leave your fiber bundle. So this geodesic geodesic tractography algorithm can sort of be used to generate many other fibers, but that's not what we're going to do. We're going to use this result to initialize a volumetric segmentation. So there's many methods for doing volumetric segmentation of DWMRI, and I know Christoph has done a lot of work in this. So there's these region-based methods with, and also an edge-based method for doing these DTI volumetric segmentation. So what we're going to do is actually use these, but we're going to tailor these methods to do fiber bundle extraction. In particular, we're going to sort of put in a shape prior to model the geometry of these fiber bundles. And one other challenge in these segmentation of these fiber bundles, and in particular the singulum bundle, is that, as I mentioned earlier, the statistics of the statistics in the singulum bundle sort of vary throughout the length of the along the length of the bundle. So this is just a projected tensor view of the DWMRI data. So now I want to get to some recent work that we've been doing on using variational approach and modeling the singulum bundle as a tubular structure. Okay, so why do we want to model the singulum bundle as a tubular surface? Well, first of all, it's a natural shape prior. The core of the singulum bundle is approximately tubular. And the thing is with these DWMRI images, they're very noisy, and it's hard to actually segment the singulum bundle without using a shape prior. The other advantage is in terms of speed. One can show, as I'll show in the next slide, that you're actually changing the segmentation procedure from detecting a surface to detecting just a curve. So you save a lot in terms of computation. The other thing is doing statistical shape analysis of studies relating to disease and non-disease patients. So this tubular representation makes doing statistical shape analysis much easier. Okay, so here's our model for the singulum bundle and also other fiber bundles. So you're given a center line, which is a space curve, and a radius function, which is a radius that varies along the length, that varies along the center line. This is our representation of the surface. So really what it is the envelopes of the collection of disks along this center line. And one can sort of make a make a more rich model by using making this sort of an ellipsoid or any of course you would have to have another parameter, not just R, but maybe the axis lengths and the angle. So the nice thing about this representation is that the surface is identified with the center line and the radius. So you're essentially, the surface is essentially a 4D space curve. So now I want to talk about constructing energies on tubular surfaces. So naturally, since this tubular surface is identified with this 4D curve, which I'm calling C tilde, we can just construct energies on these 4D curves. So the energy functional we're considering is this sort of weighted length energy. So you integrate along this 4D space curve with respect to the 4D arc length measure, and you integrate this function psi, which depends on both position and radius, and the tangent to the center line. So the idea for choosing the psi is to, so the psi is really just the function on the collection of all possible disks. So what you want to do is try to choose psi to incorporate statistics of the DW MRI local to the disk. And this is in sort of comparison to in the standard region-based methods, which use one set of statistics for the entire bundle or entire volumetric region. Okay, so here's an example choice of psi. So this is based on the assumption that the statistics at a location in the singulum bundle is locally homogeneous, but differs greatly from the statistics just outside of the singulum bundle. So the way you choose the psi is by doing the following. So the value at psi at this disk right here, and this here is the tube, is obtained by doing the following. You construct this disk, which is concentric to this inner disk, with a larger radius, but with the same orientation as well. And you look at the mean of the DW MRI in this annulus region, and you calculate the mean in this disk, and then you design psi 1 to be small when these two mean intensities are as different as possible. Okay, so here's the formula. So what one needs to define in this case is what do we mean by the norm, and also what do we mean by the mean. Okay, it's actually we're using all of the information from the DW MRI. We're not doing we're not projecting it to get some tensor representations. We're processing the raw data itself, and so defining the mean and the norm on these the DW MRI is actually much easier than doing defining the mean and norm on DT MRI. So recall that the DW MRI is a function from R3 cross S2, which is a sphere, to scalar values. So if we want to average F1 through FN, which are pixel-wise intensities of the DW MRI, then you just take the mean of the corresponding values at each particular direction. So you just average corresponding directions. V is the direction. And the norm that we're using, we found in the experiments that just using a simple L2 norm on the sphere was pretty good for doing our experiments. Here's another example choice of psi. I'm going to just give you an overview. I don't want to get into all the technical details, but the idea is that the corresponding energy that corresponds to this psi is a weighted surface area. It's essentially a weighted surface area, and the weighting function is sort of an edge detector tailored to DW MRI. And so what one wants to do is sort of maximize this weighted surface area functional so that the boundary of the surface or the boundary of the region corresponds to edges in the DWMRI. Okay, so I want to talk about, now that we have the energies, how do we optimize these energies? So we're going to use a gradient descent procedure, and why do we want to do this? Well, things like minimal paths, global techniques such as minimal paths don't apply to this particular form of the energy functional, which is a general function psi, and that depends on the direction. And moreover, we're actually not interested in finding a global minimum. We want a local minimum close to the initialization that we do for this structure. So what we want to do is compute the gradient flow. So when we do this, we get the following expression here. And I just want to point out that there's two terms, and this I want to draw your attention to this term in red. So this right, this CSS is the curvature vector, and psi plus psi VV is some matrix multiplying that curvature vector. And so if you want a well-posed flow, you need for this factor here to be positive definite if you're going to decrease the energy of interest, or negative definite if you want to increase the energy. But one can show that for these choices of psi 1 and psi 2 that are of interest to us, this condition isn't satisfied. So the flow is ill-posed. What I want to point out is that it's not just these tubular energies that can be ill-posed, but there's a variety of active contour active contour energies that have this property. And so what I want to do now is try to construct another minimizing flow for this energy E that is well closed. Okay, so to construct this other well closed flow, let me recall the procedure that everyone uses when computing gradient flows that's found in the active contour literature. So given a curve C and a deformation field H, one computes the directional derivative of the energy E at the curve C in the direction H. Okay, so then what one wants to do is manipulate this expression, this directional derivative, into this canonical form of the integral along C with respect to integrating with respect to arc length measure of H dotted with this vector V. So the next step is to call V the gradient and write down the gradient descent flow. But there is an assumption that we're making in going from step 3 to 4, and that's the following, that the norm on deformations of the curve is given by this geometric L2 type norm, and that is defined by the following. You just integrate along the curve of this deformation, and you integrate with respect to arc length. Okay, so the reason why I'm mentioning this norm is because the gradient and therefore the gradient flow depends on this norm. So here's a way of interpreting the gradient. It satisfies this maximization problem of maximizing the change in energy of C in a direction H over the norm of the deformation. And so what really, the gradient is really the most efficient perturbation, in that it changes the energy in moving in a direction H by the cost of moving in a direction H. So by choosing a different norm, we obtain a different minimizing flow without changing the energy E. So we're not adding any kind of regularity terms to make the flow well closed. Okay, so the norm that I want to propose for stabilizing or making this flow well closed is this geometric Sobolev type norm. And this relates to the work of the group at Johns Hopkins, which they presented yesterday. This is the same Sobolev type norm, except we're doing the Sobolev norm on deformations of the curve rather than deformations of the grid, of the image grid. So it's defined as the integral along C with respect to arc length, except now you're taking the norm of the derivative of the deformation H. And this was not something we designed just for this particular application for these tubular energies, but it was something that me and my collaborator, Professor Tony Yezzi, developed for doing active contours. So here was the original motivation for doing this. We were interested in finding descent flows for energies that led to better local minima. So this diagram up here represents sort of the space of curves, and the values here represent energies of that, the energy value of that particular curve. So the idea in changing the norm from L2 to some other norm was trying to rearrange this space without changing the energy so that further looking local minima appear closer. Remember, since the gradient is the most efficient perturbation, it prefers to look for local minima that are closer to your initial curve. Okay, so if you have this initial curve right here and these two deformations of the curve, if these two deformations decrease the energy the same amount, then the Sobolev type norm prefers this perturbation because this value of the derivative here is much lower here than there. Okay, so just to give you some idea of what this Sobolev type gradient flow looks like. So here's a synthetic example of a really noisy image. And if you run the L2 gradient flow, you sort of get stuck in a local minima. And to counteract that, one would add some regularity term. But if you weight the regularity term quite low, you still get stuck in a local minima. But if you try to increase the weight on that regularity term, you so that you surpass these intermediate local minimum, you sort of lose the fine scale details of the object of interest. Now if you look at the Sobolev gradient descent, you sort of move in core scale ways, and finally when core scale motions or smooth motions that are no longer possible to minimize the energy, then you move to these more coarser scale motions. So the reason I'm mentioning these Sobolev norms is because the Sobolev norms stabilize these flows involving length as the tubular energy that we're interested in. So one can show that the Sobolev gradient is just a convolution with the L2 flow, and this kernel has this following property, that the second derivative exists in a distributional sense. So So if you consider the energy, which is just the length of the curve, then the L2 flow is this this curvature vector. And once you calculate the Sobolev flow, the Sobolev gradient, you see that it's just the curve minus the centroid of the curve. So what that means is that this is a rescaling of it's a rescaling of the curve. The flow is just a rescaling of the curve. So it's stable both in the ascent flow and the descent flow. Okay, so back to our fiber bundle extraction. We're going to use the Sobolev gradient descent to actually implement the gradient flow of these tubular energies. So just to review, so we're giving two C regions at the beginning and the end of the fiber bundle. And then we so we use this geodesic tractography algorithm that I mentioned to find an initial space curve which connects these two regions, these two seed regions, and it roughly estimates a fiber in the fiber bundle of interest. We then use that as our initialization for our tubular surface evolution, and then we optimize the tubular surface energy. So the optimization of the energy goes in two steps. You first evolve the interior of the tubular surface, which is equivalent to saying you evolve the interior of the 4D curve using the Sobolev gradient descent. And then for certain choices of psi, you can also move the endpoints. So you move the endpoints to adapt. Perhaps you choose the wrong seed region, so you can move the seed points or move the endpoints to get something more accurate. And you iterate between these two things.
What prevents the curve then to shrink?
Yeah, that's why I said it's only for particular choices of psi. So remember that I had two choices of psi. So one was I was trying to increase the surface area, essentially the surface area. So if you're increasing the surface area, you don't want to shrink. But for the first choice, you're right, you can't move the endpoints. So here are some 3D views of a sample result that we obtained. So this is the left and the right singulin bundle. The initialization was what I showed earlier. And to show that these results make some sense, here are some cross sections of the DW MRI. So these are tensor. So we project to get the tensor, and then these are its coloring is based on the maximum direction of diffusion obtained from the tensor. So in the top row, you just see the DW MRI image, a slice. And then in the bottom, you see the singulin bundle projected onto that slice. So right here, you can see, so here's part of the singulin bundle, and you can see that we get this, but then you see that the surface actually comes out of the screen. So if you move the slice far enough ahead, then you see that it's actually capturing another part of the singulin bundle. And similar here, you have the right part of the singulin bundle. So to summarize this talk, I presented a method for fiber bundle extraction. This applied to the singulin bundle, but it also applies to certain other fiber bundles in the brain. We used a geodesic tractography for detecting a single fiber in the bundle, and then used that as an initialization for a volumetric segmentation. And so we modeled these fiber bundles as a tubular region. And so for future work, I'm interested in doing statistical analysis of singulin bundles, and this tubular representation makes doing that much easier. So thank you for your attention.
That was fantastic. Fantastic. Thanks very much.
So there's time, well, there's an infinite amount of time for questions, but are there any final questions for Ganesh and, before we go?
How hard would it be to extend this to other kind of shapes? Because there's a lot of fiber bundles in the brain that are really not tubular at all.
Yeah, so this applies only to certain tubular structures. So if you want to extend it to, say, make the disks to some curve, one can do that, but you don't get the, you know, the computational advantage that I was talking about.
Yes.
If the fiber is not simple, can you take part of it very simple, then apply the method?
Could you
just say that the cross section?
Yeah.
The cross section is not simple.
Yeah, it's generally it's an approximation. It's not exactly circular. But if you look at, sorry, go ahead.
Even a fiber that does not have a simple cross section.
Yeah.
Would you take part of it that does have a simple cross section and it is smaller, and then apply the method?
Sorry, I don't understand. So what? So you're.
Because I thought you said that.
I cannot hear the question either.
Yeah. Could you repeat the question so I can probably repeat it again?
For next to the other set, like if the cross section is not circular,
yeah,
then the method does not apply.
Well, it depends. So it depends on what cross sections you're taking. So if you're taking these usual, you know, coronal cross sections, like an ellipse. The cross section can look like an ellipse, right? In some, some slice has to look circular. But as I mentioned before, you can generalize this to more ellipsoid looking regions or other. Okay.
Any other questions? Well, let's thank all today's. Well, one more question.
Sorry.
One more question.
And then one last question. For, okay, for this very special case where we expect circular intersections, what if this first initialized geodesic line is not well centered?
Yeah, it doesn't have to be. Actually, what we find is that when we use this geodesic active tractography algorithm, it's not actually in the center. It's more like in the lower part of the singular bundle. So the algorithm adapts, so it moves the center line as well.
But
it doesn't have,
points,
yeah.
All moving in,
yeah.
First step.
Yeah.
One that brings the question: what if it's more than slightly off? If it's if the initialization is not correct, if it's
it only has to be pretty rough. So it's just some curves located somewhere in the region of the singular bundle.
If it's across the corpus callosum.
No, it has to. It
go, you know, absolutely.
Well, if it's not too convoluted, then the method would work. So it's, it has to be a rough estimation of the rough estimation, but it doesn't have to be that accurate. Yeah.
Okay, let's thank all the speakers for today.